Hungry for spicy food and even hotter conversations? Craving community and authentic storytelling? Then join the table. This is Minor Legends, a new comedy fiction podcast supported by Potluck. Pull up every week with me, Angela Wong Carbone, and follow the stories of me and my friends as we serve up tasty tales of what it means to be Asian American at our weekly dinner hang. If you enjoy deep dishing on absurd stereotypes like tiger moms who tutor your dating game rather than grades, the insanity of your parents' immigration story, to the legend of that one good Asian cousin you can never live up to, then pull up a seat and grab a plate. Featuring dinner guests like Ronnie Chang, Brian Park, Usama Siddiqui, Celia Au, Perry Young, Supriya Ganesh, and more. It's a tasty rotation that'll leave you belly laughing and steeped in relatable and spicy conversations. Can you take the heat? Listen now for free wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
And hey, welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And we are here for our November 2025 mid-month book news check-in, where we go over the latest Asian American-related book and publishing news. As always, Books and Boba is supported in part by our listeners. So if you've been enjoying our podcast and want to become a bigger part of our book club, you can do so by heading over to patreon.com/booksandboba, where as an official Patreon supporter, you gain access to our members-only Discord server, where you can talk to us and fellow book club members in real time, discussing all sorts of topics, including our monthly book club picks. And if you join us at the Honey Boba level, you also gain access to our monthly bonus podcast, Boba Chats, as well as the opportunity to help us pick a patron's choice book club pick once per quarter. The next patron's choice coming up is our January pick. But yeah, with that said, Rira, it seems fall has fallen in Los Angeles. How are you enjoying the cooler weather?
I guess so. Yeah, like I haven't really left my house all that much, and that's great because everything is like climate controlled. So
yeah,
we're gonna get a lot of rain this week. I am sad though that we didn't get to see the Northern Lights, because everybody else did, and I was like, great. The only people who can't see it is LA. Everyone in the world can see the Northern Lights except us, because we have quote-unquote perfect weather all year, so we don't deserve it.
That's fine. I enjoyed watching everyone else's pictures of the Northern Lights. I'm sure it was nice for everyone else who were able to see it.
Well, I'm glad that you guys were able to see it, but I'm just saying that it should have been me. I wanted to be a part of the experience. I'm so sad.
As always, we start off our mid-month check-ins by highlighting some of the latest Asian American publishing announcements. But yeah, let's get started for the second to last time in 2025. Rira.
That's crazy. I cannot believe that. Yeah, so as always, I've collected the book deals from Publishers Weekly, and our first book deal is in a three-book deal, 23rd Street acquired world rights to Overrated by Jean Luen Yang, with art by Jacob Perez. The graphic novel kicks off a new series set in mid-aughts Los Angeles and centered on P. Flo, the city's most popular hip-hop dancer, who finds himself in the crosshairs of a group of assassins that hunts celebrities they judge as undeserving of fame. The first book is slated to be published in 2027.
That sounds harrowing. This is like the extreme version of, you know, mid-aughts is like a very specific time period, right? It's before really the proliferation of social media, but it's also like that was the era of like America's Best Dance Crew, remember? Like some might say the early signs of like an Asian American cultural renaissance that came in like late aughts and 2010.
Yeah, I am trying to remember the early aughts. I mean, I'm not that young, but I was like in middle school around that time. So I think it is around the time when Asian Americans particularly became more mainstream. Like obviously like J-pop and K-pop were a thing in the early aughts, but I feel like it really took off and it was kind of like, oh, Asians got game too. They got Riz too. That was like when it started, in my opinion.
I think that really came with the growth of like social media and especially like online communities, right? I seem to remember like late aughts was when a lot of like I became aware of the existence of like really scary Denizen fans.
I mean, they've always been there though. Like they've been around since like the 90s. 2000, like I would say I joined Facebook around like 2008. So it really was like the perfect storm of like social media and like America's Best Dance Crew. And of course, like Zanga was a thing for a while. So like the swirl of like Asian American influence happening all at once. But I think this is a really funny story. I did not expect a group of assassins who are just like, hey, you don't deserve to be famous. And I'm like, ooh, okay. Netizens who have gone a little overboard.
I mean, netizens giving death threats, not necessarily a new thing, even in the mid-aughts, but like netizens that follow through on those death threats. Yeah, that can be pretty scary.
But Jin Luen Yang, he is the author of American Born Chinese. And also he wrote the Boxers and Saints comic. So he's very well known.
And prolific even. He's definitely one of like the, you know, when you think of Asian American graphic novelists, he's one of the first. Yeah.
And he's also written Dragon Hoops, which was like about his experience with basketball. So yeah, like he's booked and busy. And, you know, it's really nice to know that, you know, he's continuing to broaden the landscape of Asian American literature.
Yeah, so looking forward to Gene's next project. All right, next up, 23rd Street Line at World Rights to Ink and Blood, Poetry and Power in the Lives of Emperor Li Yu and Chairman Mao, written by Cheng Yu and illustrated by Sung Yung Choi. The graphic novel tells the tale of the 10th century Chinese emperor, whose dynasty collapsed due to his love of poetry, and the 20th century communist leader, who also wrote poetry. Publication is set for 2027. Yeah, so I'm not super familiar with Emperor Li. Let me just double check. Let me see what dynasty he's even from.
Again, we are Asian American. We did not grow up in Asia, the motherland. So obviously our history knowledge of the motherland is not as sharp as it should be.
I guess he was part of the Southern Tang Dynasty, and his reign started in 961 AD. So not ancient China, but also not like one of the more recent dynasties, kind of in the middle there.
How does a dynasty fall due to poetry? I'm very curious on that.
I mean, when your emperor is too busy writing, you know, poems of making executive decisions, usually that's when the ministers take over and corruption rings, right? I'm just like spitballing here, but I feel like that's how most dynasties fall, is when the emperor loses control of the court and basically someone else decides, I want to be emperor now.
Yeah. This is a really interesting title, though. Ink and Blood, Poetry and Power in the Lives of Emperor Li Yu and Chairman Mao. Two figures that I would just be like, what do they have to do with each other other than they were like leaders in China? So it's interesting that poetry is what ties them together. I think this is a really cool topic. All right, next up, Delacorte Press acquired The Peacock Throne by Ziba Shanaz, the author of Midnight Strikes. The YA fantasy duology was pitched as Anastasia meets This Woven Kingdom. Set in a world inspired by 19th century India, the story follows a young woman who believes she's a descendant of a long overthrown imperial dynasty and gets entangled in a dangerous conspiracy that could spell her country's doom if her false marriage to the chief conspirator's son doesn't kill her first. Publication is planned for fall 2026. This sounds amazing. I love stories of lost royalty.
Yeah.
Yeah, coming back into power. Well, not power, but you know what I mean. Like lost royalty and, you know, there's like a new empire or new regime, and it's like, okay, how do you fit into this new world?
Yeah, like fallen princess, fallen royalty. You know, there's a reason why the Anastasia story is so popular, right? Because everyone likes the idea of like finding the lost like heir, right?
Well, like the whole point of like the whole Anastasia myth is like the death of the Romanovs were so brutal, right? Like, so it was a rumor to make people hope that, oh, at least like one child made it out of that like horrific execution. And I think it's kind of birthed a lot of stories where it's like, oh, like maybe you can be a missing princess or prince too.
Yeah. And, you know, hidden identity always makes for like some thrilling drama, especially in fantasies, especially in Asian inspired fantasies, which is also, you know, we love to see here at Books and Boba. So congrats to Zeba on the book deal. All right. Next up, Abrams Fanfare has bought Nat Iwata's graphic novel, Forest Freaks. Blending American mythology with Japanese folklore, the book follows identical twins Ben and Yoshi, who move to a new town and discover something supernatural in the woods behind their school. Publication is scheduled for fall 2028. I don't know what it is, but something really speaks to me about twins having adventures.
That's because you have twins.
Maybe. Yeah, this sounds like a lot of fun. My twins aren't identical, but I'm sure they'll get a kick of like other twins having adventures.
Yeah, and I don't know like what supernatural creatures live in the woods in this new town, but I'm guessing that since this book is infused with Japanese folklore, we'll be seeing some yokai, some familiar anime demons that we have seen in our history.
Hopefully they're the cuter ones and not like the effed up ones, because some Japanese demons are pretty scary.
Yeah, it's like how scary are we going in the scale of like Japanese folklore? Like, are we going like Japanese horror movie or like...
Just give me a cute fox. Give me a little cute nine-tailed fox, you know?
Okay, next up, Penguin Workshop acquired world rights to Grammy Award-winning musician Lofi's debut picture book, Maymay the Bunny. Illustrated by Lauren O'Hara, the picture book is about a little bunny with big dreams of making the world a happier place through her music. Publication is slated for April 2026.
This sounds real cute.
Lofi, I love her music. Very, calming.
Don't know. I'm sure I've heard her music before. I just don't know if I can place. I don't really listen to popular music these days. It's like it's all kids' music in the car now.
I wouldn't really say like her music is popular. I mean, she's well known, but like I don't think she's like a pop star, you know? Because a lot of the music that she comes out with is like very like jazzy and like slow and like old timey. Get in touch with the culture, Mark.
I think
she's been around for a while.
I think since turning 40, I'm legally allowed to disconnect with popular culture.
Not when we are podcasters involved in pop culture, especially you, since you run Good Pop.
Yeah, I guess this is my sign to listen to some Lofi music, because Riris told me to.
Yeah, it's very peaceful, very calming.
All right. Our next book deal, Roaring Brook has acquired world rights to Aunties, a picture book written by Pooja Makijani and illustrated by Ruchi Masani. The book is a celebration of all of the aunties in our lives. Publication is set for spring 2027.
I don't know if we need to celebrate all the aunties. Some of them are a little too much.
Some aunties may be a little
celebrate themselves too much.
Yeah, some might. You know, we can acknowledge that they are an auntie and, you know, choose how much of that auntiness we want in our lives. But, you know, because this is a picture book, I'm sure all the aunties in this book will be quite delightful. One would think.
Yeah. As an auntie myself, I'm trying to be like the cool aunt, you know, like the childless cool aunt who will like allow you to stay past bedtime and like get you ice cream. And when you're older, like see movies that are past your the age rating. I hope that I can be a cool aunt. I don't want to be uncool amongst, you know, like there's nothing more embarrassing than like a young person telling you how uncool you are through their gaze, just silently checking you out and be like, you're so uncool. And it's like,
I think the more you try to be the cool aunt, the less cool you seem. So you just gotta be, just be cool.
Yeah. I'm not going to like visually, like never let them show you, never show your weakness to the young people. So I just have to be very sneaky about it.
Yeah.
All right, next up, Henry Holt bought at auction The Girl, The Village, and The Terrible Thunder, written by debut author Amy Yeelim Lee and illustrated by Haewon Yum. This humorous story, inspired by a Korean folktale, is about a girl with a powerful, very smelly secret and how she learns to use it to help her community. Publication is planned for spring 2027. I'm trying to think if there are any folktales that I know where there is a very pungent smell involved.
Yeah. I mean, is the Terrible Thunder, is it a fart? Or is it like kimchi? Is it some sort of pickle? Or like, is it like BO? Because Koreans, like Asian people, typically don't have BO, right?
We don't have the gene. Which, you know, thank God, because that's something that I would hate to worry about. My husband, like he has like a very bad sense of smell, so he can't smell anything. Like to a point where we spilled vinegar during our move, like balsamic vinegar onto like our garage concrete. And I was like, oh, it smells so strong. It's so vinegary here. And he's like, what does vinegar smell like? Because I honestly can't smell anything. And I'm like,
you know,
it's a superpower.
A blessing and a curse, really. Yeah.
It's a superpower because I feel like there are way more terrible smells than good smells in the world.
Yeah.
I'm really glad that I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, that's not to say Asian people don't sweat. Our sweat just doesn't smell as bad.
I think sweat smell and body odor are two different things, though. Because like when you get sweaty and you have like a sweat-drenched shirt, obviously it's going to smell like something, but body odor is like more violent in my opinion. Considering that like I've gone to a lot of like conventions in my life and I'm like, God, deodorant is
necessary.
Like, I've been to many Asian-led events too, and I'm like, I never struggle with holding my breath because of bad body odor. So it's a genetics thing. We've been blessed in that regard.
Yeah,
I don't know any folktales where there's like a smell involved. So interesting.
Well, I'll be very curious to learn about what the smell is when this book comes out in 2027. Just in time for my kids to start requesting bedtime stories. I'm sure they would love a story about something smelly. All right. Next up, Bloomsbury has bought world rights to Jade versus the Claw Machine, a picture book written by Margaret Chu Greenius and illustrated by Heather Brockham Lee. When Jade's Baba's Boba Shop gets a new claw machine with adorable prizes inside, Jade is determined to beat the odds, win a toy, and change her look forever. Publication is set for spring 2028.
Jade, those claw machines are rigged.
Now, here's where I call foul, because if it's your dad's claw machine, that means you get unlimited plays, right?
Yeah. Like, people don't realize that the claw machines, there's like a certain number of
quarters. It's like
quarters.
A gacha, right? It's like,
yeah, it's like a gacha. Because like the claw is purposely weak for most of the catches. So you have to catch it at like a, you have to be like the lucky person with the strong claw.
Yeah, you have to be the lucky person to get the strong claw pressure and also be good enough to take advantage of that and aim well.
Yeah. Like I've seen a lot of tutorial videos on getting like prizes at claw machines because I'm just amazed by people's skills. Some people like swing the claw around so that it like scoops up one of the prizes that's on like the shelf that's like not in like the floor but like on the shelf as like display, and I'm like, wow, amazing.
Yeah.
I have one friend who is really good at claw machines and it truly is a talent.
I'm dreading the day that my kids would want me to win something from a claw machine because I'll be like, no, dad's not good enough at these.
No, they'll have to win it themselves.
I'll just buy you the doll. That's probably cheaper.
It is cheaper, but where's the fun in that? All right. Next up, Versify bought Sun's Eid, written and illustrated by Natasha Khan Kazi, author of Moon's Ramadan. The picture book is about the sun's journey through the celebration of Eid al-Adha, following a family as they pray, share meals, and give to those in need, making a day of joy, family, and tradition. Publication is scheduled for winter 2028.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've had like an holiday book in our book deals, but I do like the framing of this being through a son's journey through the celebration. So maybe the son is like observing everyone celebrating Eid.
I wonder if it's a companion book to Natasha's previous book, Moon's Ramadan.
Oh, that's true.
Son's Eid and Moon's Ramadan. So it sounds like a pairing.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense.
But congratulations to Natasha Khan Kazi on their new picture book.
Yeah. All right, our next book deal, McElderry Books acquired Shamim Abubakar's debut novel, The Echo of Empires, pitched for fans of Leigh Bardugo, Saba Tahir, and S.A. Chakraborty. This crossover fantasy is about three former street rats who become magically bound to mythical beasts, plan an epic heist, crash a royal wedding, and accidentally unravel an empire while they're at it. Publication is set for spring 2027.
Riff raff, street rat. Scoundrel.
You need to stop. You can't be sued by Disney.
That's what I think every single time the word street rats pop up. It's like,
yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure Aladdin is what brought the term street rat into the popular lexicon. But yeah, this sounds like a, I guess, Aladdin meets, not Power Rangers, but...
Because it's a heist, so it is like Six of Crows. That's why Leigh Bardugo is included in the pitch.
That's true, but also kind of Digimon?
I mean, Digimon in a sense, but not really, because they like evolve. It's not like one beast, so...
I mean, mythical beasts can also evolve. I wouldn't be surprised if like these mythical beasts turn into even stronger versions of mythical beasts as the story seemingly escalates from heisting to taking on an empire, right?
Yeah, I'm just thinking like, oh yeah, there's like a big royal wedding, like we're going to steal, I don't know, some kind of jewel, like I'm just thinking about like the Louvre heist, you know? It's like we're going to get in and get out and then it's like, oh no, repercussions. The empire is kind of in a crisis now because of what we stole. Yeah. It sounds like a lot of like high stakes and it sounds really fun.
Yeah.
All right, next up, Lee and Low Books acquired world rights to Cheryl Kim's untitled picture book biography of Catherine Sui Fan Cheng, the first female Chinese pilot to hold a commercial flying license, who joined the 99's Club alongside Amelia Earhart and performed daredevil aerobatics at air shows across the U.S. in the 1930s. The book will be illustrated by Nicole Wong. Publication is set for fall 2027. I have never heard of Catherine Sui Fan Cheng, so it sounds interesting.
Yeah, I haven't heard of her neither. And I think it's really cool that books like these unearth these like hidden histories, right? Because the history that we learn is like stories that someone has decided that we need to learn to understand our context. But, you know, especially as like Asian Americans, as minorities, as like people of color in this country, a lot of our stories live in like the silences, right? Live in like the stories that aren't being told in our history books or in movies or media. So it's really cool that I'm sure Cheryl did a lot of like auxiliary research to like find and document Catherine's story because like, you know, working in, I've done a couple like history related podcasts and like the amount of work to just like piece together these stories from like secondary accounts is like, it takes a lot because a lot of times like the primary sources from these subjects, you know, letters, notebooks, documents, they're not kept because people didn't think they were important to keep back then. It was just, you know, the writings of like a Chinese lady, right? So yeah, it's really cool that these stories are.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to add like how many of us have heard the name Amelia Earhart? Like it is a very recognizable historical figure, especially in aviation history. And, you know, when we think about the 1930s, a lot of the times we don't think about the people of color who were probably, you know, doing cool things, too. And it's like, great. Like, yeah. I love how there is proof now that we were pioneers and we were doing daredevil stunts in the air as well. So this sounds like a pretty cool picture book.
Yeah, so looking forward to checking out Cheryl's book when it comes out, also in 2027. All these books coming out just in time for me to populate our bedtime story queue. I love it. All right, next up, Mimi Books has acquired world rights to Mongoose's Holy Party, a picture book by Darshana Kiani and illustrated by Abhilasha Khatri. In this Indian twist on the tale of the Little Red Hen, Mongoose is getting ready for a holy party bash. Her friends can't wait, but when Mongoose asks for their help, they are full of colorful and exasperating excuses. Publication is slated for February 2027. I think Mongoose needs better friends.
I'm just looking up what holy is. Or
that's the festival holly. Color, right? That's the...
Oh, it's like with the powdered colors that people put on each other.
Yeah.
So it is a festival that most prominently celebrates the beginning of spring. So it makes sense that it is a holiday that's filled with colors and filled with laughter.
Yeah. I hope this is, and it's been a while since I've read The Little Red Hen, so I don't really remember the story, but I do hope that they're all just pulling the mongoose's leg and they're actually planning a surprise holy party for them at the end. That's how I would write the children's book, anyways.
All right, next up, Delacorte Press acquired at auction The Gods Will Sing Our Song by Autumn Krauss, the author of Before the Devil Knows You're Here. The YA historical fantasy was pitched as Divine Rivals meets Lovely War. Set in a World War II incarceration camp and inspired by the author's grandparents, this romantic novel follows two first-generation Japanese-American teenagers drawn together by fate who collide with ancient magic and confront heart-wrenching injustices as their world crumbles around them. Publication is set for fall 2026. It's nice whenever I see authors writing stories based on their grandparents' like journey. Like, we've been seeing a lot of those, and that's really great.
Yeah, I'm interested in the historical fantasy aspect too, right? Because you know, it's explicitly set in a World War II incarceration camp, and I wonder what kind of like magical, you know, shenanigans. Like, it doesn't seem like magical realism. It's more like, it's more overt, like magical, like fantasy, right?
I mean, who knows? Ancient magic makes me think it's more overt fantasy than like, you know, like realistic magic that can magical realism.
Yeah. All right. Next up, Nancy Paulson Books, a Penguin imprint, has acquired Livia Blackburn's middle grade fiction debut, Echoes Across the Water. Set in the aftermath of the Chinese Civil War, the book follows two girls, one in Mao's China and one in KMT-ruled Taiwan, who find their lives intertwined through dreams as they navigate a secret that may heal their families or tear them apart. Publication is set for spring 2027.
Oh, I was surprised that this was a middle grade novel.
Yeah.
It's a very serious topic.
I mean, middle grade books can have serious topics as
well. Oh, of
well.
Course,
think,
of course. But
you know, I think because the main characters are two girls, I think that's where the middle grade, you know, themes come in. It's interesting. We were just talking about like Japanese American incarceration, a major canon event in like American history. The Chinese Civil War is something that is more of a canon event for like my family, right? Because we are here, like I'm here because of that Civil War. And you know, with civil wars, it comes with, you know, families being ripped apart. Some people left, some people stay. Like, even now, like, I don't know my entire family. Like, I only know my immediate family. A lot of family that stayed in China, we've kind of lost contact with. I think my dad's tracked down some of my grandmother's relatives. But in terms of, like, the history of my family, like, it really starts with my grandfather, as far as I know. So, it is interesting to have like a middle grade book exploring the themes of what happens to like real people, what happens to people on the ground when a country splits apart.
Yeah, civil wars are, you know, there's something very specifically heartbreaking about it because the enemy is literally your own people. So like I am surprised that this is a middle grade novel, but considering that kids have gone through so much in the past and even today, it sounds like a very, you know, it sounds like a very important book.
Yeah.
All right. So our last book deal is Barefoot Books acquired world rights to What's for Iftar, written by Rosina Omar Guta and illustrated by Ezra Hidari. On the day of his first full Ramadan fast, Humza wants to make a dish for iftar that everyone will love. But what should he make? Publication is planned for autumn 2026. So iftar is the meal that you eat after fasting.
After you break your fast, yeah.
Yeah. What do people usually eat for iftar?
I don't know. Like, I don't have, like, fasting is not part of any of my cultural traditions. And I'm kind of like, I kind of imagine, like, what would you want to eat after not eating for, like, what was, like, 12 plus hours?
I've had to fast before, surprisingly, even though, like, I grew up Presbyterian, because I'm like, what the, like, we're not Catholic. Like, what the hell are we doing fasting? But I've had to fast for, like, charity events. And it was for, like, 30 hours. And I'm trying to remember, like, what I ate after that. I think quite literally, like, I ate a full meal. And you're not supposed to do that because it shocks your system. Like, you're supposed to slowly eat things so that your stomach doesn't, like, get upset. But I think I literally ate, like, tonkatsu one time. Like, just, like, a giant bowl of rice and a bunch of fried pork. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure we'll learn all about the different things you can eat for iftar from this book.
There are so many things, so many choices, you know? How do you break your fast?
Yeah. Whatever. All right. I wonder if anyone just gets, like, a ton of pizza.
I don't know. Maybe. I think it really depends on your age. Because yeah. I think about, like, I think about now in, like, my mid-30s, I'm like, I definitely cannot eat a full plate of tonkatsu after fasting for, like, 30 hours. Maybe like a 12-hour fast, but, like, it depends.
But yeah, congrats to Rosina and Ezra on the book deal. And I guess those are our book deals for November 2025. Let's move on to some news. Riro, what's been going on? Tell me about the Goodreads Choice Awards.
Okay, so that is our only piece of news for this episode because, I mean, a lot of things have happened on book threads, but they're all, like, very stupid things that I don't really want to talk about. Like, there's a lot of conversations about, like, is AI writing real writing? Are trigger warning spoilers and illegal audio book clubs where you pay like $20 to like some secret force and you just listen to pirated audiobooks? And I'm like, that's illegal for sure. And you shouldn't be proud to say I'm part of an illegal book club. Yay. And also like George R. R. Martin winning a case against OpenAI, but his anniversary edition of Feast for Crows having AI art, allegedly. So it's been very fun in the book sphere. However, none of it is Asian related.
Yeah, these sound like good Bubble Chat topics. So I'll definitely bring these up maybe next week when we record our bonus podcast that you can also listen to if you join us, if you join our Patreon at the Hillney Bobo level.
I should prepare a PowerPoint on the alleged AI art in Feast of Crows because it, like, the team said that they had no involvement with AI, but it is just, like, atrociously bad. Like, you can see the AI from space. It is, like, so blatant that I just have to, like, share it with you. So I'll have, like, some visual guide for our Boba Chat.
I'll take a look. Yeah, I feel like AI art has gotten, like, some of it has gotten pretty, like, there are less detectable AI art, but sometimes it's, like, it's just there. You just see, like, this just looks, it just looks bad. Right.
I think,
like,
it's harder with videos because there's like it can move quick. So you don't like you don't see a still image and you can like look at all the details. So I've been seeing a lot of like AI generated animal videos and I'm like, how dare they take this away from me? I look at cute animal videos to unwind stress and they've taken that from me because now the first thing I think of when I see an animal video is this AI. Mm. It's terrible.
How dare they? Yeah.
How dare they? So the 2025 Goodreads Choice Awards has begun. The opening round for it is open for votes until November 23rd. So that's next week. And most popular picks from the opening round will move forward to the final round, which opens from November 25th and will run until November 30th. Now, I have issues with the Goodreads Choice Awards, like every bookfluencer out there, simply because it's like a reader's choice award, right? But ironically, you don't have to read any of the books to vote. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the books that got voted are by straight white people. And there is definitely some disconnect with some of the genres, because I'm just like, I could have sworn there were some really good books by BIPOC authors in this category, but their book is not listed here. So obviously, there's a lot of in the Goodreads Choice Awards, but it is an award that publishers, you know, pay attention to. If your book is nominated, if your book wins a Goodreads Choice Award, that is marketed very heavily. And that affects reprints, because most of these books are, you know, hardcover when they come out because they're new books. So it directly affects the book's success and the author's success. So we are going to go through the categories and list the books that are by authors of Asian descent. And some of them are books that we have read for this podcast. Some of them we've had the authors show up for author interviews. So you can listen to those episodes and trust our judgment and vote for them.
Yeah, definitely. I think I feel like the books in MOBA, like these are, I guess we're not.
These are our champions.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah.
it's like a horse race. And you're just like, I'm just going to pick a random one.
We just want our team to win. That's all.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So Marvin and I will take turns going through the categories. We're not going to summarize them because obviously there's a lot of them. But if you would like to have more information about the books, you can go on the Goodreads website. They have the categories all listed and you can go through and read their summaries, check out their ratings and all that jazz. So our first category is Reader's Favorite Fiction. We have The Emperor of Gladness by Ocean Vuong, A Guardian and Thief by Megha Majumdar, and The Loneliness of Sonia and Sunny by Kiran Desai. And we've read Megha's book, The Burning.
The very depressing A Burning. Yeah. Yeah, I remember being very bummed out by that book. So I don't know how Guardian Thief is, but congrats to Megha for making it on this list again. And we've read Ocean's also first book, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. So,
like, familiar names, I'm telling you. Like some of these are friends of the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. For favorite historical fiction, we have Homeseeking by Carissa Chan. For favorite mystery and thriller, we have Vera Wang's Guide to Snooping on a Dead Man by Jessie Q. Sutanto, who we've had on the show to talk about her debut novel, Dial A for Auntie. But we also read the first Vera Wang book for book club as well. So definitely Jessie Q. Sutanto, a favorite of our book club. And very excited to see her on this list. And for favorite romance, we have King of Envy by Anna Huang.
Okay, so for favorite romantasy, we have A Witch's Guide to Magical Innkeeping by Songgo Mandana, which we read like 2 months ago. We also have Alchemize by Senlin Yu and Immortal by Su Lin Tan.
Okay, so I know.
So we have to vote for Sangu's book. Like, it is mandatory.
Yeah, but also, is this categorized correctly? I mean, I guess there's no cozy category.
Okay,
so the closest thing is romantasy, right?
This is a whole thing, Marvin. We covered this last year when Goodreads changed their categories and they made a romantasy category. And we're like, what the fuck? Like, I know that there are more books that are technically marketed as romantasy, but I feel like you guys are just throwing in random books in there and not understanding the actual.
Right.
Yeah.
There should be like a favorite cozy witch fantasy. I think that would be like a good category.
Because, you have A Witch's Guide to Magical Innkeeping, which is like cozy, feel good, you know, found family. And then you have Alchemize, which is dark romance, like sexual abuse and just like PTSD. And I don't know what Immortal is about. Sorry, Sulin, but I'm just saying vastly different vibes. It's like, what? Like, how are they under one category, the same category?
Yeah, it does seem a little mismatched, and definitely I think it's because like the alchemized flavor of romantasy is just so popular that if they had sticked out in fantasy, it would like probably win, right?
Yeah. They're just like, well, it doesn't fit into contemporary romance, and it doesn't fit into, I mean, it does fit into fantasy, but it is more romance heavy. And I get it, but I am really tired of this genre. I am like really tired of the marketing.
I feel like there needs to be two, like it needs to branch further into two separate, like romantasy and like effed up romantasy, right?
Like dark romance,
yeah.
Contemporary romance, historical romance. Like I feel like the romance genre is so big that you can't just put it all under one category.
I mean, it's the Golden Globes problem, right? It's like when The Martian was nominated for Best Comedy that one year.
Yeah. I do wonder how they categorize these books for the awards, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
Next up, we have readers. Favorite fantasy, we have Red City by Marie Lu, Catabasis by R.F. Kuang, and Water Moon by Samantha Soto Yambao.
Yeah, all books that I'm really interested in, especially. So I have the, I did purchase the hardcover of Catabasis with like the, you know, the illustrated side of the book, just to have, but I have not cracked open that tome because there's really no, like, the moment I hold anything in my hands, it will get destroyed by my son within a minute. So
that's why you have to night read. I really want the special edition of Catabasis because the illustrated pages look really, really cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, these are really strong books for this category. Yeah, I've heard great things about Red City as well.
Yeah, that is Marie Lu's adult fantasy debut, I think. So I'm really interested to see what she brings to, you know, because she's done mostly YA fantasy, right?
Yeah. And Water Moon, it's a book that I've heard pretty good reviews from a lot of bookfluencers on YouTube and also like Book Talk. So
yeah,
this category like is pretty strong for Asian American writers.
All right. Next category, favorite science fiction. We have Hamajang Luck by Makana Yamamoto, Salt Crop by Yumi Kitase, who we just had on our podcast for an author chat, These Memories Don't Belong to Us by Yiming Ma, Luminous by Sylvia Park, and Local Heavens by K.M. Forjado.
Again, we are obligated to vote for Salt Crop because we've had Yume on the podcast.
Yeah. In lieu of not reading
this is how it works.
Books, this is the only book we read. So, and yeah, we liked it. We did really enjoy it. I enjoyed Salt Crop. I think you did too, right? You liked the
boat
trip across a ruined United States.
Yeah. So, for favorite horror, we have What Hunger by Catherine Dang, Bat Eater and Other Words for Cora Zhang by Kylie Lee Baker, which was last month's book club pick. And then Immaculate Conception by Ling Ling Huang, who was the author of Natural Beauty, which is a pick from last year. I think that was like last year's spooky read.
Yeah.
So who do we vote for? Do we vote for Kylie's book, which was an official book club pick? Or do we vote for Ling Ling Huang's sophomore novel?
I mean, I think we're honor bound to support Bat Eater just because it was... We actually read that book. We didn't read Immaculate Conception. But I'm sure it's also
I do love
good.
Ling Ling Huang's writing, though. I should definitely pick up Immaculate Conception.
Yeah. Her first book, Natural Beauty, was just such a... It's so... Like, it's very memorable. Especially, like, the body horror parts at the end. So, really interested to see what she came up with next. But, yeah. Congrats. This, again, a stacked. I'm sure there are other books that are also really good, but... We don't care about them because they weren't written by Asians.
I will say, like, please do go on the Goodreads website and look at all the books that got nominated. I only pulled out the books by authors of Asian descent because of, you know, the point of this show is to spotlight authors of Asian descent. But there are some really good books on there and some that are, well... I do question their eligibility, but that's neither here nor there.
All right.
So for the favorite debut category, we have Homeseeking by Carissa Chen, The Original Daughter by Jemima Wei, and Alchemized by Senlin Yu. So we have two familiar titles from previous categories.
Multiple nominations, always cool. All right, for favorite young adult fantasy and sci-fi, we have Hecate the Witch by Nikita Gill, Heavenly Tyrant by Shiran J. Zhao, Every Spiral of Fate by Tahereh Mafi, Watch Me, also by Tahereh Mafi, The Floating World by Axie O, Breath of the Dragon by Shannon Lee and Fonda Lee, Never Ever After by Sulin Tan, and A Forgery of Fate by Elizabeth Lim.
Yo, out of all the categories, we have the most number of Asian writers in this category. To be fair, they merged young adult fantasy and sci-fi together when I think they should be separate categories.
But yeah, how come the adult category has two separate ones, but the young adult does not? That seems discriminatory. That does not make sense. Goodreads. Let's have a word.
But yeah, lots of familiar names on this list. We've had Axie on our show recently to talk about The Floating World. I really liked it. I think the sequel is coming out like in February, like really, really quickly, I think. Wait, it already came out. It came out in October. How did I miss it? Oh, my goodness. All right. So I do have to like go buy a copy of that because I really need to read the conclusion to it. Heavenly Tyrant, that is the
sequel of what was that?
Iron Widow.
Widow, yeah. We've also had Shiran on our show as well. Fonda Lee's new book that she wrote with Shannon Lee, who is not her sister, but the daughter of Bruce Lee. It's like a fantasy based on the writings of Bruce Lee, which it's kind of cool that Shannon's been like producing all of these like TV shows, movies, and books based on like her father's philosophy. And it's really cool to have Fonda be a part of it because still one of my favorite like writer of action scenes.
Yeah, like I would say like Fonda is probably like the best choice when it comes to writing about like martial arts mixed in with rich fantasy. So
yeah. Lots of great choices. I think, you know, our pick will probably have to go to Axie because we did have her on the show to talk about The Floating World. But definitely a lot of great choices in this category. You can't go wrong with any of them. And definitely excited to, you know, have all these books to add to our TBR list.
All right. So for favorite young adult fiction, we have You Found Oliver by Dustin Thao, When Devils Sing by Zan Kerr, and I Am Not Jessica Chen by Anne Liang. We've read You Found Oliver and had Dustin on our show this past year, so we are obligated to vote for Dustin's book. I have heard pretty good things about I Am Not Jessica Chen by Anne Liang, so that is on my TBR for sure.
All right, and so for our last category, favorite memoir, we have Finding My Way by Malala Yousafzai, 107 Days by Kamala Harris, Mother May Comes to Me by Arundhati Roy, and Things in Nature Merely Grow by Yiyoung Lee.
So memoirs is a category that we don't really go into all that much on Books and Boba, but we read a couple. So these might be contenders in the future. No promises, but
Yeah. So no official pick from our end, but definitely a couple very strong choices here from some, you know, high profile people. So yeah, congrats to all of the nominees for the Goodreads Awards. You know, even though we have our quibbles with the awards as a whole, it's always still cool to win an award and always cool to see, you know, our authors win those awards. So we're not gonna say don't vote for it. You should participate because someone's winning this award and I'd rather be, you know, one of our picks, right?
Yeah. Again, Goodreads Choice Awards, I mean, it does carry weight, even though you can vote for things that, you know, you have not read. So really, like, the requirements for it is, like, it's questionable, but publishers, they do take it seriously. They do pour money into books that have won the Goodreads Choice Awards or was nominated for it. And a lot of these BIPOC authors, I mean, we've only listed the authors of Asian descent in this episode, but a lot of the BIPOC authors who were nominated, they could use that recognition for more paperbacks, more marketing.
Yeah, I mean, for better or worse, a lot of people do use these awards to help them make their purchasing decisions. So yeah, congrats to all of these authors, and hopefully we see them all move on to the shortlist. But yeah, with that, that'll do it for our November 2025 edition of our mid-month book news check-in. Mira, as always, thank you for compiling all the publishing and book news for this episode. Before we go, though, just a quick reminder that our November 2025 book club pick is Taiwan Travelogue by Yang Shuangzi, translated by Lin King. It is a story of a Japanese novelist traveling through Japanese occupied Taiwan in 1938, along with her interpreter. And it follows their journey as they travel across the country. And, you know, it's hard to describe this book. I don't know if you started reading it yet, Rira. I know you usually don't start reading until later in the month, but the book is set up as like metafiction. It is like presented as a translation of a rediscovered text by a Japanese writer. And so there's like a lot of like meta layers in the book. It reads like a travelogue, but there's also footnotes from both the author and the translator, and forewords and afterwards by like other translators that have written, that have interacted with the book through its like fictional life. It's a very interesting setup.
Oh, metafiction, my nemesis on this podcast. I just have like a history with metafiction picks on Books and Boba. Like I tend to not like them, but hopefully this will change my mind.
Well, here's the thing, right? It's only metafiction if you have like the paperback version, if you have like the book version, because that's the one that comes with the forward and afterwards from fictional like scholars. The audiobook version actually doesn't have the forward or afterwards.
Oh, interesting.
And yeah, just goes straight into the text, so you wouldn't even know it's like it is metafiction.
But that sounds like I have to read the print edition though, because that's what the author intended, right? So to miss out on that, just that doesn't sound right to me.
Well, so this is an interesting discussion that we're having in the Discord, which is like, is that forward even necessary? And I wonder what you'll say about it. I'm looking forward to our discussion at the end of the month, because it is like, I'm not gonna, you should read however you feel is the most complete way you want to read. But I have some thoughts on like whether or not we actually needed that word or not.
Memories of interior Chinatown is flashing through my mind.
It's not as like overt as that. So the metafiction only occurs in the fact that the text is being framed from the foreword. If you just read like the chapters in the book, there's no like metatextual like layer in it at all.
Okay. So, okay. Yeah. Well, we shall see.
Yeah. So as always, we are reading along on Discord. So if you're a Patreon supporter, please let us know your thoughts as we go along. And for those of you who aren't on our Discord, you can also let us know your thoughts on the book on our Goodreads forums. As always, we love to include your feedback on our discussion episodes whenever possible. But yeah, that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you all next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu, and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @booksandboba, and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Hungry for spicy food and even hotter conversations? Craving community and authentic storytelling? Then join the table. This is Minor Legends, a new comedy fiction podcast supported by Potluck, Pull up every week with me, Angela Wong Carbone, and follow the stories of me and my friends as we serve up tasty tales of what it means to be Asian American at our weekly dinner hang. If you enjoy deep dishing on absurd stereotypes like tiger moms who tutor your dating game rather than grades, the insanity of your parents' immigration story, to the legend of that one good Asian cousin you can never live up to, then pull up a seat and grab a plate. Featuring dinner guests like Ronnie Chang, Brian Park, Usama Siddiqui, Celia Au, Perry Young, Supriya Ganesh, and more. It's a tasty rotation that'll leave you belly laughing and steeped in relatable and spicy conversations. Can you take the heat? Listen now for free wherever you get your podcasts.